From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call this toll-free number now, 1-800-462-7413. And of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes. Does clenching your fist, right fist or left fist, actually make a difference in your memory? Sort of some interesting data I find very provocative.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about being overweight in your 20s. If you're a guy, what does it mean for your health when you're in your 50s and 60s? Mm-hmm.
So some junk science along with some real science. Coming up later in the hour. What's our recipe?
It's not junk. It's rustic bulgur rolls, and you'll like them. Rustic bulgur rolls are delicious.
Here's our number again, 800-462-7413. To the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Franklin, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Pastor, and Tom, of course.
Oh, thank you very much. What's up?
Maybe I've been spending more time in friends' kitchens than I have in the past, but I've just recently noticed how many people leave butter on the countertop all day and all night. This, of course, makes it much easier to spread, but since the packaging says keep refrigerated, just wondering if there's any problem with this from a health standpoint.
That's a good question, I think, because that does happen a lot.
Well, a lot of people leave butter out. In fact, I have a number of friends who leave the butter out, and I actually looked and I thought, I wonder if what this does. Well, there are a couple of things that are involved. First of all, if you leave butter out, it's warm enough and hot enough, it'll get rancid, and you can tell by the smell of that. And that's obviously due to bacteria that are on there. But I don't know of any diseases that are caused by butter in the home with moderate temperature. Now, I don't know about the South, but, in the North, in Wisconsin, where the temperature is like 70, 72 in your house, mm-hmm. 68, I do know a number of people leave it on it, and I haven't seen it. It's an oil, and I haven't seen anyone get sick. You don't get sick with vegetable oil that is sitting in the bottle.
I've got a newsflash for you, Zorba. Yeah. They have air conditioning in the South.
Oh, my goodness. They do. They have air conditioning in the South. You mean it's not always 95 and blistery heat and sweating? But I haven't seen anyone who comes in with food poisoning for that. I don't think it causes a problem, and if it does, I'm going to come back and talk about it because I'll do some research.
We'll hear about it.
We're going to hear about it anyway. But I don't think it causes a problem. It doesn't last as long. It's not going to be as fresh, but the fact is the way people use butter, it probably doesn't matter because they use it up pretty quickly. So you've been spending too much time in the kitchen, you said?
More time than usual.
Well,
you're still going to be putting your butter in the fridge, right?
I don't know. It makes it so much easier to spread.
Totally. Totally. I have actually gotten to the point where sometimes I will leave butter out, and then my wife, Penny, will come by and say, put that butter in the refrigerator. So I only can leave it out for a certain period of time.
Before Penny sees it.
That's right, before she sees it and either puts it in the refrigerator or tells me to put it in the refrigerator.
Or find a better hiding place.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. I love it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. 800-462-7413.
Find a better hiding place in the kitchen for the butter. I've got to try that.
Now, Zorba, to Knoxville, Tennessee we go. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, my question today, I'd like to get some help in anything I can do to relieve the symptoms of cough I seem to have developed as soon as I started taking lisinopril for high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Lisinopril is an ACE inhibitor, one of the groups of drugs that we use for high blood pressure. And the side effect of that happens to be a cough. And the answer is to not use any other drug in that class. In other words, that class of drugs, if you get the cough with one of the ACE inhibitors, you're going to get it with others. It's usually a dry cough. Is that what it is?
It's sometimes a dry cough, but it's really gotten to be, I sound like a smoker. I've had to leave meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Be a racking, really sort of unrelenting cough.
Yeah, have you talked to your doctor about it yet?
Well, I have a follow-up visit with him next week, so my plan is to – he's wonderful, so my plan is to tell him, and
yes.
I imagine he'll.
So I have done research on this. For a full disclosure, there's a drug on the market now called Losartan, which is now a generic. And I did research on that, gosh, it must have been 20 years ago, 25 mm-hmm. years ago, a long time ago, when Merck actually came out with the drug. The drug is now, as I said, a generic, and it was the first drug in a new class called ARBs, A-R-B-S. And ARBs do not cause a cough. And I did some research and actually got to help author, a paper on it. So when you go to your doctor, tell your doctor you want an ARB. You'll sound smart. A-R-B. And tell him you want Losartan. There's no reason to go to the ones that are name brand. Go to the generic. Works very well, and you just can't tolerate it.
And this works as well as mm-hmm. the one she's thinking
Yeah, it works
of.
As well. It's in roughly the same class. It doesn't have the side effect of the cough. It's very well tolerated. And I would say for the most part, you're not trading one side effect for another. And that's actually what I do with all of my patients. If they've got what we call an ACE cough, I put them on Losartan now. And pretty much that's the standard because Losartan is pretty cheap. It's a cheap, inexpensive drug. So that's what you need. How long have you been on your ACE inhibitor?
About 5 months.
And that's a long time. When did you start noticing the cough?
I don't take any other medications, so I'm sort of a newbie at this. And I thought, well, maybe I'll get used to it, or maybe I just have a little head cold.
Uh-huh.
So it took kind of a while for me to put it together that it just wasn't going away.
Well, let me tell you, it took a while for the FDA to put it together, too. Mm. So you're not the only one. The FDA also had trouble, too, putting it together.
So, well, that's good to know. I'm in good company.
There you go. There you go. Thanks.
Well,
thanks
great.
So much
Thank
for
you.
Your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And before our next call, Zorba, clenching my fist can help my memory?
Oh, of course, Tom. Don't you know that?
Tell me about that study.
This is an article out of Montclair State University. I don't know where Montclair State University is, but it's in New Jersey. That much I know.
Mm-hmm.
Published in the journal PLOS ONE, P-L-O-S-1.
Oh, the scientific
a
journal.
A scientific note. Journal of note called PLOS ONE. And it says, but there's some interest to this. This is not total junk. Clenching mm-hmm. your right hand may create a stronger memory of an event or action. And clenching your left hand, you might recall the memory better. And so it's a bunch of people they took, like 25 people, something like that, put in a room. They were assigned to different groups. The right-hand people had to clench their fist for 90 seconds before memorizing a list, and then just before they recalled the words. One group looked at the left hand memorizing again, and the volunteers who clenched their right fist when memorizing the list and then clenched their left fist when recalling the words performed better.
Is this a right brain, left brain thing?
Well, I don't really know because you're holding your right fist when you're memorizing and then you're holding your left fist when you're recalling. Doesn't quite fit into that. But for me, it reminds me of the fact that if I want to memorize something, I have to write it down. And I am a very fast typist. I type 80 to 90 words a minute. Mm-hmm. If I type a word, I don't memorize it. I have to physically write down. It's sort of a graphological memory. And the problem is I have an awful handwriting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I have to scribble something to be able to memorize it.
I have an idea for you to do even better with memorizing.
Okay.
You clench the
Okay, I'm doing it right now. Okay, I've got to clench.
In your hand and then
right hand.
Right.
And then right. Got it. I got it, Tom. And then when I'm recalling, I'll be clenching in my right hand, then I'll clench in my left hand, and I'll recall it with my left. You know what? You know what? That's why you're on the show. You are the creative one. Thank you, Tom. Next caller.
Next caller.
1-800-462-7413.
Uh-oh. You know that number? That's the end of my job here. That's the only thing I'm here for. You don't need me if you know the number. Anyway.
That's it. We're cutting down.
To the phones we go. West Bend, Wisconsin listener now. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
I guess we're okay. How can we help?
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to call because my dad had a concussion at work a few months ago, and he's actually still getting a lot of the symptoms, if not worse. And we went to the doctor, and they wanted to put him on all these tests and all these medications, and I was asking questions on what would help him and, like, what benefits and reactions we would see from the test, and they wouldn't give me any answers. So I just wanted to call and see. They recommended that he get a sinus surgery, Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know if from a concussion, if that would help to make things more normal for him.
How'd he get the injury?
He was actually punched at work.
Punched? He's not a boxer, I assume.
No.
Guy punched him in the eye at work?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, concussions can be awful, and they can last for a long time. I'm not going to talk a lot about this guy, but obviously your dad ought to consider filing, you know, a police report on the guy who punched him. Very, very important. But getting back now to your dad's problem, concussions can last for a long time. You can have, first of all, they can last forever. Some people get a concussion and
really?
They have trouble forever for the rest of their lives. Other people get punched and they die. In other words, right away at the time. So it's can be a very, very serious injury. And so one of the issues is most people get better over time, but it can take 2 months, 4 months, 6 months to actually improve. Now, if they're recommending sinus surgery because he has headaches, it may be that his sinus cavity was imploded during the actual punch. And that of course, could be the issue. Is your dad going to a neurologist or an ENT doctor? Who's he going to?
We just went to a general practitioner, kind of wanted to call to see if it would make sense to invest the money to go because we don't really know, like, what's causing the headache.
Oh, well, first of all, I think, does your dad have insurance?
Invest them?
He doesn't have any insurance at all.
Correct.
I want to go back just a minute to this. So this happened on the job. Was it a regular job that your dad had where he was employed?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the issue is whether or not this is a workman's comp injury.
That's what it is.
Wouldn't you think? I would file a workman's comp claim. It happened on the job, was not his fault. It's a workman's comp claim, and I would do it. And workman's comp is very good insurance. I would do that right away.
They claim that he was at fault.
Well, they may claim he's at fault, but then that's a determination for the workman's comp board to claim. I would claim workman's comp. Your dad should be evaluated. It's very important. And most hospitals, they have something called community care. If he can't afford it, they do a reduced price. He needs a CAT scan if he hasn't had one. If he continues to have pain and discomfort, he needs a CAT scan of his sinuses. And I think that really is important, especially since he still has injuries. This happened on the job. He should definitely file a workman's comp claim. That's I think, in his best interest to do.
And if you got a CAT scan, what would we be looking for?
Well, you'd be looking to see whether or not parts of his sinus cavities were disrupted and if that's the cause of his headaches and whether or not surgery would help correct that. That's what you'd be looking at. You'd also, if you're doing another CAT scan of the brain, sometimes we do them serially. We want to see if there's any blood on the brain or between the brain and the skull that may be causing the headaches, something called a subdural hematoma, which is a collection of blood. So you get a lot of good information, very important information, especially in a concussion that's not getting better.
Okay.
You keep track. Just give us a call and let us know what's happening. See, maybe we can help with this. Okay?
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you so much for the call. A lot of really important issues here, Zoe.
Very important issues. And, you know, if an employer says, well, don't file it because it's not workman's comp, that's not the right answer. The answer is file it. And then the workman's comp company decides. And then, once again, if the workman's comp insurance says it's not covered, you have rights under the law to actually go to another, I don't know what they're called, but they're basically adjudication boards. They look at it and they make a decision as whether or not it's workman's comp. What do you have to lose? Nothing. You've got time to lose.
No.
But for an employer to say, no, it was your fault, well, somebody hit you, you know, on the job, was it your fault or not? I'd want to have a judge decide that. I wouldn't want to have it decided by my employer.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I've literally worked and lived all over the world. I actually began as a little boy right after World War II in Japan before the 50s. And a lot of food has gone into my ancient GI tract. And I have difficulty with flatulence and potty, and it's crazy. And I love legumes. I can't eat beans. I don't know of anything that I can actually eat that isn't putting me in distress.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what to do, Doc.
Couple of things just off the bat. Number one, have you been tested for ovin parasites and Giardia? Have you had that test?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. Have you been tested recently for it, within the last 6 months or so?
No.
Okay, so number one off the bat, you want to get a Giardia test just to make sure Giardia is it's a simple thing to test for. And, you know, you want to get from your doc to be checked to make sure you don't have any parasites. Just a common thing, and even though you were tested, you just want to redo it again. You want to put that off to the side. That's number one.
Okay.
I'll tell you what number two is, and then I'll as an idea, and then I've got some ideas here that may actually work. Looking at your food, you want to see whether or not there's any lactose issues. So I would recommend for a while, no dairy at all, nothing. No yogurt, no milk, no cheese, nothing at all. Though cheese is far better for you than because most of the lactose is removed in the cheese-making process. But I would stay away from dairy for about 2 to 3 weeks. See what happens.
Okay.
See whether or not it's a dairy-related issue. Next thought on my mind, is this sprue, comma, celiac disease, comma, gluten intolerance. Now, gluten is the hot new thing that people have. They go to restaurants and they have a gluten-free diet. And there are a lot of people who do not have gluten intolerance that believe they do and think all of their gut problems are due to gluten. But there truly are gluten gut problems. And this can be found out with a blood test. It's a screening test. It's a very good test. You want to be tested for gluten. Now, let's assume that all of these are negative and nothing is really kind of panning out. Then the next step I would do is there are a number of things that are antispasmodic that you might want to try. There's an old-fashioned drug called Bentyl, B-E-N-T-Y-L, 10 milligrams or 20 milligrams 3 to 4 times a day, works for a number of people. There's another drug called Levsin, L-E-V, as in Victor, S-I-N, put it under your tongue. It's histamine, which is this antispasmodic, old-fashioned drug in a new format, works for some people and works well. Then there's a really old drug called Donatal, D-O-N-N-A-T-A-L, that we stopped using years ago, but people are using again, and once again, that works. Now, the final thing is there is a new procedure, which is basically a stool replacement procedure that University of Wisconsin does, the University of Washington does, where basically they take stool, mix it up in a slurry, get rid of some of the stool in your body, and put someone's stool in your body so that it repopulates your body. And it's a very, very new procedure. And it seems to be successful for people that we can't figure anything out for. And you've got a gut problem. And my recommendation is you want to go through this whole series of things. And if not, you may want to look at stool transplantation. That's basically what it is. And it's sort of a low-tech, high-tech new procedure that is experimental, but seems to be very, very successful in people such as yourself. And that's what I would consider trying.
Oh, bless you. I got to tell you, I haven't had an intelligence comment on this for a long time, but I got to tell you, all it's doing is getting worse. I really appreciate the time you gave me.
My pleasure. And let us know what happens. Please call us back.
So. Thank you so much. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, let's gear up for another round of Judge Zorba. Are you
ready?
I've
got my gavel. It is in my hand.
Today we have a question from Kat in Kohler, Wisconsin, who's wondering about the wisdom of her mother's advice. Now, that's a subject I don't want to get in the middle of, so I'll let her take it from here. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, my mother swears by the power of kefir. I already eat yogurt every day, but she's convinced that drinking a cup of kefir instead will solve all of my problems, the digestive ones anyway. I know from past experiences that I should just assume she's right and carry on, but I can't let it go. I prefer to chew my food rather than drink it. So is kefir really a wonder food, or is this all just hype?"
It's all just hype. I go bang on the side of you and not on the side of your mother. There is no difference at all, no appreciable difference in basically the bacteria that are used to make yogurt, the lactobacillus, and the bacteria for kefir. There's no difference. It's pretty much exactly the same. Now, there's slight differences, and they taste different, and one is more liquid, but kefir is basically like a liquid yogurt. That's all that it is. Now, getting back to solving the problems. Now, if we look at lactobacillus in the GI tract, for some people, it helps them regulate their bowels, regulate the gas in their body, and it makes a difference. But I have never met anyone who had all of their problems solved by taking yogurt. Only the digestive ones, as you said. The other problems, pretty much, you have to attend to in other ways.
Well, I hate to be secretive about it, but what if she just kept one of the, a couple of those kefirs around and then hid the yogurts?
Hey, Mom, look, I'm drinking kefir. That's exactly it. Have like a fake thing in the refrigerator so no one will see it.
Does your progenitor push your buttons? Just send your family feuds along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
No kefir or yogurt in our recipe, which is coming up. We have more of your questions, of course, some more interesting info to pass along, and our medical myth buster. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, and we have a line open, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, it's recipe time, rustic bulgur rolls.
That's right. Now, have you ever had bulgur?
I have no idea what it is.
A bulgur, well, it's a, bulgur is a grain, it's a grain product. It has kind of a rough taste to it. I used to eat it years ago when I was in medical school because it was cheap and inexpensive. I have not had it in years. And for anyone who wants to try something a little bit different, sort of a rehydrated bran, if you will, they might like this. Do you like bran cereal at all?
Well, all right. You're making this sound very delicious. You
obviously
only eat it if you don't have any money.
Well, it's an economy dish. Do you like? You're making me laugh too much. I can't do the recipe.
Right.
Do you like grape nuts? Grape nuts? You eat grape nuts?
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not hitting a bell. Do you like cereal?
I eat cereal, but it's got to be loaded up with goodies,
sugar,
like
right.
raisins and
Got you. So you eat like cornflakes, right, which is loaded up with...
Oh, no, not
what
cornflakes.
Cereal do you eat? Not cornflakes?
No, this was stuff I get at Whole Foods with...
you go to Whole Foods with lots of stuff?
Like honey in it.
Yeah,
and,
all this
stuff,
all the sweet stuff that, so you can eat the cereal.
Right,
okay.
Right.
Well, this is an economy dish, so it's good. It's okay to have an economy dish. You know, shrimp, which is expensive, economy, which is cheap. What do you think? All right, let's go on it.
Okay.
Start a half cup with dry bulgur. Actually, it is dry when you buy bulgur, and you can buy it at Whole Foods.
Okay.
Yeah, you can buy it at Whole Foods.
Half a cup of dry bulgur.
And for the most part, if you're going to go into the grocery store, it will be in the natural food section. It's not a mainstream food. But, you know, it's just like a lot of other foods that have become, you know, that we have not eaten of a grain sort. One cup of boiling water.
Cup of boiling water.
An envelope of dry yeast.
Envelope of dry yeast.
Now, because I make a lot of bread, I buy my yeast at Costco, and for $5, I get an enormous amount of yeast. So anyone who uses yeast for bread, don't get the packets. Get the bags at a place like Costco.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter cup. You're going to use some more water. We'll just talk about it when we actually make
quarter
the recipe.
Quarter cup of more water. Okay.
One cup of skim milk.
Cup of skim milk.
A tablespoonful of rosemary leaves. The fresh ones, if you can. They are so fragrant. Fresh rosemary leaves. And I can even get rosemary leaves now in my grocery store in Oregon, Wisconsin. They have a little section with fresh spices, and it's wonderful.
Oh, excellent. A big tea. Fresh rosemary
leaves.
That's
right. Two of them. Two big teas.
Two. I'm sorry.
4 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
4 big tea olive oil.
A tablespoonful of honey and a tablespoonful of brown sugar.
Big teas of honey and brown sugar.
Teaspoon of salt.
Little tea salt.
An egg that you are going to beat.
Egg beaten.
A cup and a half of whole wheat flour.
1.5 cups of whole wheat flour.
And a cup of white flour. The all-purpose would be fine, although I use the unbleached. I use Sarasota unbleached or King Arthur. Do you use King Arthur flour when you?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I wonder where the
about.
Name King Arthur flour came. It's a flour company, and I use it because it got good reviews in the bread recipe machine book that I had one time. Well, moving on. Okay, let's make the recipe. Place the bulgur into a bowl. Pour the boiling water over it. That's going to be 1 cup of boiling water. Cover and soak it for an hour until it's basically absorbed all the water.
Mm-hmm.
So it's now become liquid. Then sprinkle the yeast over the warm water, stir it in to dissolve it, scald the milk in a pan. That means heat it until it starts to bubble around the edge of the pan. Then add the rosemary, the olive oil, honey, brown sugar, salt, and beaten egg till they all come together, and then cool it to a lukewarm place and then mix it in with the bulgur. Start the mixer or finish it by hand, but move the whole thing into a nice nice ball as you would with bread. Then on a lightly floured surface, knead it until it's elastic and smooth. Make it round. Place it in a greased bowl. Let it cover and rise until it's double in size. And then when it comes out, roll it off into 12 little balls. So you have these little bulgur balls, if you will. Brush each one with a little bit of olive oil. Paste it onto a cookie sheet and let it bake until it's double in size, which is going to be about 15 to 20 minutes in a 400-degree oven. And what you have then is a wheat bowl, which is made of bulgur, which is sort of a form, if you will, of a grain that is going to bubble up. And it has a very, very interesting taste. It's a very, what I think of as a natural foods taste. Mm-hmm. 200 calories for each one of these rustic bulgur bowls. And very interesting if you want to try something different that is very high in fiber. It is a high fiber dish.
Yeah, the rosemary and the honey and the brown sugar kind of are attractive.
Are attractive to you, that's right. Yeah. But if you want fiber, you can get this. Come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can get this recipe. You can get other recipes. Tom and I have lots of comments on the Facebook. You can see what we look like. Lots of photos. Lots of pictures. I'm trying to sell you to come to us on Facebook. And that's zorbapastor.org on our website or Facebook.
Yeah, being able to have a picture of me is a real
attraction. It's wonderful. You know, every time I look at the picture of you when you and I were at that at the event in Milwaukee, it actually was a good picture. It makes me smile. I thought it was quite. Did you like it? Did you see it?
Of course not.
You know, you're still stuck in the typewriter age. I don't even know if you have a computer at home?
Well, sure.
What year? Well, uses floppy disks?
It's been around, but my wife uses it.
Yes, your wife uses it. It's been around. But your computer has been around the block, right?
My computer? It's a computer, and she uses it. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And a listener now, Zorba, in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, recently I was diagnosed with nummular eczema, and I'm 27 years old, and I've never had any eczema-like symptoms. So I was wondering what could have made this happen and maybe what I could do to get rid of it.
Yeah, I think we've heard about this from a caller in the past, but I can't remember. What is nummular?
Well, it means a little circle, a little spot of eczema.
Okay.
I mean, that's basically – it's the way the eczema looks.
Okay.
Eczema can be brought on by a lot of things. It can be a chemical that you touch that produces an irritation, you know, on the skin. It can be from allergies to things that are common. It can happen sort of just on their own. It happens in children all the time. A lot of children grow out of it as an adult, but a number of adults have it. Keeps on recurring. You went to your doc and had a diagnosis, I take it?
Yeah, I don't actually have health insurance, but I'm in college right now, and we have a campus hospital.
Sure.
And so I didn't go see a dermatologist. Mm-hmm. I only talked to my general doctor, but he basically said the same thing. He looked up a picture so I could see what he was talking about, because it was round, that he said it was nummular.
Right. That's really all it means. So what'd you put on it? What have you put on it so far?
Well, for the longest time, I was using just 1% hydrocortisone cream.
Over the counter.
And then he actually wrote me a prescription for a stronger hydrocortisone cream to help out, and I have been using that. But very sparingly, because it's very expensive.
Well, there are a couple things. Sometimes what we do with nummular eczema is we hit it hard with enough medication to actually get rid of it. And then you go back either to the 0.5% hydrocortisone or 2.5%, which is a prescription cream but very, very cheap, to keep keep it under control. And then for a lot of people, they just keep it under control with an over-the-counter salve such as Aquaphor, Eucerin, or Keri products, K-E-R-I. But I would recommend you call up your campus doctor and say, look, this was really expensive. I want a cream. It's got a long name, Triamcinolone, but its initials T as in Tom, M as in Mary, C as in Charlie, TMC cream. 0.1%. Inexpensive, cheap, highly effective, and that's what I would do. I'd call back and say, look, I don't want to have this cream. It's too expensive, and speak to the doc or the nurse. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably, without having to go back in, get that cream. And then what I would do is I would hit it hard for 2 to 3 weeks and try to get rid of it. Then I would sort of go off of it and go back to the 0.5% or the 1% over the counter. What brought this on, I don't know. You have to look and see if it comes back, if there's something that you're doing or that is touching your skin that's doing it.
That's what's so interesting is it started out on my leg, mm-hmm. and then it moved to my foot and my torso.
Sounds like you might have a little touch of eczema, and the nummular eczema, once again, is just a description of how it looks on the skin. Hit it hard. And then go back to a very, very light cream, either medicated or non-medicated. And once again, sometimes these things appear for a year or two, and then they disappear. And frankly, I don't think we have a good explanation as to why. So thank you for your call.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Maryville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I had this weird problem where when I was 15, I started getting little pimples on my chest, and they turned into full-blown keloid scars.
Oh,
and wow. I get them on my back as well, and mm-hmm. there's just a few, but the dermatologist say, well, try Mederma skin cream. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work. And I'm not sure how to get rid of them.
Well, keloids can be a big problem.
So I was wondering if you had any advice.
Yeah, they can be a big problem. How many do you have around your body?
Well, I have two on my chest mm-hmm. and then two on the back of each shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to a dermatologist at all or your family doc about?
I have. Uh-huh. Yeah, they always ask me, have you had surgery mm-hmm. or have you been cut? Or mm-hmm. I'm like, no, they just come out of nowhere.
Right, and they do. They come out of just nowhere. Has the dermatologist, have either ones recommended injections with steroids into the scar itself?
Yes, I've had some of those, and it lessens them, but it doesn't take them away. Mm-hmm.
Well,
it really hurts.
First of all, the keloids may never go away. That's the bad news. The bad news is there's no magic. You can't remove the keloid. You can't take the scar away because another scar forms. In other words, that's the big problem. You'd say, why not just cut this off and then I'll heal normally? But sometimes you end up with a bigger scar, and that doesn't work. But sometimes repeated injections of steroids over a period of time can get the keloids to shrink, become less symptomatic, and less problematic. They don't solve the problem completely, but they can ameliorate or improve the problem. And I think it's something you really ought to consider doing. And you've had the injections, but you may want to have more of them. But unfortunately, there is no cream that gets rid of keloids. They are a big problem with keloid formers that have them, and there's just no magic bullet to it. But the steroids do shrink them down. Okay. Are they in a place that people see all the time?
Well, no, I can cover them up with clothing, but, I'm a girl.
Right.
I would like to wear low-cut dresses.
Right, right.
And I just can't do that.
Right, and it's just a problem. The thing about keloids is multiple injections over time can make a difference. And if you're not pleased with one doc, then go to another doc. But somebody who does them all the time on a regular basis is probably your best bet. Mm-hmm. So good luck, and thank you so much for your call.
We appreciate it. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, Mark in Cedarburg, Wisconsin, needs your hand in answering a question that's gotten under his skin. He writes, I'm obsessed with using the hand cream called No Crack to stop my fingers from cracking in dry weather. How does this work, and why is it more effective than plain lotion?
Well, it's just a moisturizing cream. I happen to use that cream periodically. How does it work? Well, it keeps the moisture within your skin. And there are a whole variety of creams that people find aesthetically pleasing for them. So let's say you're going to go into Walgreens or CVS or one of the big pharmaceuticals. You'll find a whole bunch of creams. Some are thicker, some are thinner, some are more tackier, some are more like an ointment, some are more like a cream. You're addicted to it because you like the way it feels on your hands. There's nothing special or magic about one cream versus another. When it comes to cracked skin, lotions tend to be much lighter, a little bit more drying than other ointments. So the answer is there is no secret. Find the cream that you like and then stick with it.
Personal preference.
Absolutely.
Need Zorba to crack the code to a curious cure? He won't leave you high and dry. Just send your questions along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. We take a short break, then we're back with some interesting research. More of your questions, our medical MythBuster 2, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have an open line for you at 800-462-7413. But, Zorba, before our next call, some, I think, important research on the dangers of obesity.
Right. This was an article that came out in the British Medical Journal, and it looked at Danish guys, okay, Danish guys, 20 years of age, 20, 21 years of age, mm-hmm. and they were going in the army. And this is 35 years ago. So they looked at them that when they came in the army, they had psychological tests, physical tests, and so on. They've now been followed for 35 years. 10% of the guys were overweight, okay? 10% were overweight.
Right.
Kind of a small number compared to America, I bet. And then if they looked at the number who were obese, that is a BMI greater than 30, BMI is height overweight, it was roughly like 2 or 3% who were obese. Looking at the obese guys, they were 8 times more likely to develop diabetes in their lifetime. They were
eight times.
They were 4 times more likely to have a heart attack by the time they were 50, 51, 52, and 4 times more likely to have a stroke and more likely to have blood clots in their legs. And that went across the board. If they were that, even if they got thinner later on, they still were at risk at that particular age.
Still, though, that's a small percentage of people.
It was a small percentage who were morbidly obese 35 years ago. If you look at the number in America are morbidly obese now, we're in their 20s.
I don't want to nitpick.
It's a huge number.
I don't want to nitpick, but not that many people die of those things. And if it's 8% of that
You're right in that way. But if you're getting a heart attack at the age of 50, who wants to get a heart attack at 50?
No kidding.
And the bottom line of the study was that how heavy you are in your 20s makes a difference in your health in your 50s. And I have a lot of guys who come by my office who used to be soccer players and football players, and they go, well, you know, I put on my winter weight, I put in an extra 10 pounds, and I take it off in the summer. And in the end, they don't. They take off maybe 5 pounds.
So would this matter even if the person was able to lose a lot of weight?
Well, they found this was highly predictive no matter what their weight was later on. Now, most guys who were obese in their 20s are going to be obese later on. So it is going to make a difference. But this comes on the tail of another interesting study that shows that doctors appear to be maybe a little bit prejudiced against people who are obese in their office. And it was a very interesting study that looked at, they looked at the narratives. They spent the same amount of time with patients who are heavy and patients who are thin, but they looked at the interaction, which was then transcribed, and lo and behold, the doctors were nicer to thin patients than they were to overweight patients. It's really kind of a sad study because doctors should really be the same with patients no matter what they look like. So I find this rather disturbing. And I think there's a prejudice against people who are overweight, that prejudice is carried out through culture, even to doctors, and we have to be vigilant to make sure that it doesn't affect how we interact with people.
That number again is 800-462-7413. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Sand Point, Idaho. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. Thank you for taking my call.
We're glad you called. How can we help?
Well, my question has to do with my wife's osteoarthritis in her right wrist. She's been to some doctors who've prescribed anti-inflammatories, which upset her stomach. So she's taking turmeric, the herb turmeric, which she's heard is a natural anti-inflammatory. But the problem is, what I read online anyway, is that it's hard to get enough turmeric into the system because it's hard to absorb. So it doesn't seem to be making any difference. But recently she heard about an herbal supplement called Protandim that is a mixture of five herbs, including turmeric and green tea and a few other things. And the claim is that these other herbs in the combination make the turmeric more available to the body.
Uh-huh.
So my question, I guess, is two-part. First, are you familiar with Protandim? And second, do you think turmeric, with or without any other herbs, is likely to help?
Yeah. Well, first of all, turmeric is it's an Ayurvedic drug, and it's actually turmeric is used in curry. And it's a drug that's an ancient Indian drug that may have some anti-inflammatory properties. Not well studied, no good scientific information on it. There's probably no evidence that other herbs will make it better. You know, a lot of times manufacturers will combine herbs and then state this makes the herb better, and therefore that's why we're charging more money and making more money off of you. Try our drug. And so they do that. And they may actually do the research and have a passion for the herb, but on the whole they really have a passion for their wallet. And that's usually what the combinations are, because turmeric is really pretty cheap. But given that, there's no good scientific evidence, and I recommend, as I do with all herbs that you use, is you try it for 6 to 8 weeks and see if it works for you. If it doesn't work for you, give it up. And if you have a question, give it up for a couple of weeks and retake it again for another 8 weeks and see if it works, because sometimes it takes longer. And whether or not it's anti-inflammatory, we like the term anti-inflammatory. The real question is, does it reduce the pain? I mean, you know, anti-inflammatory is a term that's been out for about 40 years. Before that, it was just, well, what do I do to get rid of the pain? So from an osteoarthritis point of view, there are lots of different things. First of all, you can take Tylenol, 1 to 2 tablets 4 times a day. And for a lot of people, that relieves their pain. It's a Western drug, and she can try that out. It is easy on the stomach. It's going to help her. Another thing she can do is there are anti-inflammatory gels, diclofenac gel under the name Voltaren, Voltaren. Is a gel that's manufactured. It's anti-inflammatory. Full disclosure, we actually tested it once in our office. It was very difficult to get people in that study. But the study showed that it works, and there are a number of compounding pharmacies that will make it for you very, very cheaply.
Yeah. Isn't over-the-counter Advil better than Tylenol?
Well, but she can't tolerate anti-inflamatories because they upset her stomach.
Oh, I get it.
So
it.
The
I,
Advil I is that. Better, but yeah. It will upset her stomach. But actually, what you ask about is exactly if people say, well, if one anti-inflammatory upsets my stomach, what about the other? And sometimes one will upset your stomach and the other one will not. So actually, Tom has a good point. She might try a 200 milligram Advil 3 times a day to see if that works. Acupuncture works. Massage works. Bengay works for a lot of people. There are exercises you can do from physical therapy that works. Hot wax treatments work. There are a number of things that work for osteoarthritis. But the turmeric, getting back to that, if it doesn't work, I'd probably give it up.
Okay. Well, those are some very helpful suggestions. I appreciate that, Doctor. She's been through some physical therapy, but the hot wax she hasn't tried, so I will mention that to her. Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful.
You good. Take care.
Thanks so much for the call. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. Today's factual hiccup comes to us from listener Leslie in West Lafayette, Indiana. She writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, tonight I had the hiccups. After 10 minutes, my husband asked me to do some math problems. It worked like a charm. The hiccups were gone immediately. He swears by the remedy, but as a faithful listener to your show, I wanted to know, what do you think.
Whatever works, go for it. That's exactly it. Hiccups, you know, drinking out of the wrong side of the glass, or having my mother would shove a spoonful of sugar in my mouth, which really wasn't very good at all. You know, jumping up and down with one hand going the right way and the left hand going counterclockwise, scaring somebody, rubber band around your ear.
Drinking out of the wrong side of the
glass. Yeah, the stuff. That's right. There's everything you can do. Basically, I think the way hiccups work is you distract your mind and then the body sort of takes over. So my question is this. When you're doing a math problem, are you solving the quadratic equation? That's all I want to know. Is it back to high school in the quadratic equation?
I'm thinking, let's see. Hiccups on the one hand, having to do math on the other.
I'm going to stop. That's right. I'm going to stop hiccuping. I don't want to do it.
Heard some claims that don't add up? Just send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. And a Milwaukee, Wisconsin caller with us now. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
I have a question with regard to sleepwalking in an adult. My son now lives in an apartment on his own, and he has been a sleepwalker throughout his life. My concern is that now he's alone, nobody's monitoring him, and I don't want him to get into any kind of dangerous behavior, like leaving his apartment, getting on his motorcycle, cooking while he's asleep. And the other thing that I'm interested in knowing is if it might be related to any other medical conditions, like sleep apnea or anything.
How old's your son?
He's 26 now.
26, living on his own.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So when was the last time he sleepwalked?
I would say it was within a couple weeks. He sent me a photograph of his bedroom where he had unloaded his bookshelf and all his books were on the floor.
So he woke up. He didn't remember doing that at all in the morning.
No.
Right.
No.
In the house, what other things did he do besides that?
Well, sometimes he would sit up in bed and I would hear something. And when I would go in his room, he'd look at me but kind of through me with glazed eyes. I knew he wasn't awake. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to him. And if he did respond, it was unintelligible kind of tongues language. Or if I said very loudly, lay down, go back to sleep, he might do that. At another point in time, I found him standing on his bed as if he were surfing. And again, if I was loud enough, he would lay down, but I'm just concerned that something might happen.
Oh, sure. So there are a couple things. First of all, sleepwalking is a parasomnia, it's called. It's sort of a broad term for some of the things that essentially go on when we're sort of half asleep and half awake and we're in a reverie. And clearly he's asleep, but he's then when we're really asleep, we're paralyzed. We don't move other than move a little bit around the bed. When I have patients like this, one of the things I do is I try to get a sleep study. Now, if he's not on insurance and he doesn't have insurance, you're not going to be able to do it because they're expensive.
Okay.
And you want to find out whether or not there's something else going on. There are things called narcolepsy and cataplexy, which are sleep disturbances that can be associated with this. Medications can cause some of this. Cholesterol drugs, statins, believe it or not, can actually cause people to have parasomnias, where they actually have one patient who actually turns over and can't tolerate this because he hits his wife in bed. In other words, he'll be in the middle of a bad memory and start to move around, and she just happens to be there. He doesn't know that she's there, and he'll whack her. And so to keep their marriage okay and to keep him from going in the other bedroom, he had to stop taking the statin. But you really want to have an evaluation of this because, as you say, there can be a danger aspect. Taking the books off the bookshelf is one thing, but actually walking out a door or walking down some stairs or turning on the stove can be a problem. Is he on? He's not on any medications, I take it. Is that correct?
No.
Drinking habits, smoking habits. Does he get stoned on pot? Does he drink very much?
No.
Did you ask him?
I haven't asked him.
I would ask him directly and see what that is, because it could be related to that. Could be related, when you drink or when you get stoned, any inebriant that you do can be long-lasting, and it's possible that it's related to that. So I would talk to him about it very directly and ask him about it. But when he has insurance, I don't know if he has a job with benefits.
Yeah.
then I would definitely get a consultation from a sleep person and I would have a sleep study done. Because sometimes there actually are medications that you take to keep you from doing it, and it all is a function of how dangerous it is. Taking the books out of the shelf, you know, and all for a long period of time, that's a little – that would be a little bit disturbing because you don't know what else is going on. But yeah, no, my wife occasionally sleepwalks, so I've had this experience at home. One time she went downstairs and started making eggs, and it was a little disturbing. But it was after she had had surgery. It occurs after her surgeries, and then it disappears. Definitely sleep study. That's what I'd recommend.
All right.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And bye-bye. And before we head out for the day, Zorba, I wanted to play you a quick voicemail from one of our friends in Jacksonville, Florida. You'll see what I mean in a moment, but I think that we'll all feel much better hearing that even the youngest among us still have dilemmas for the doc.
Hello. This is Elizabeth from Jacksonville, Florida. And I have a question for Zorba. I need to talk to him about something. Okay, so first of all, I eat chicken, fish, fruits and berries, you know, bread and dairy, and stuff like that. And I take vitamins. Do I still need to eat vegetables? And here's a second question. Usually when I go to sleep, my neck starts feeling stiff and it's hard to go to sleep. Do you think you know why? Okay. I'll see you later, Zorba. Bye-bye. Thank you. Okay.
Clearly one of our younger listeners.
No doubt.
So does she still need to eat her vegetables? The answer is, unfortunately, yes. Vegetables have other nutrients in besides fruits, and fruits have more calories than vegetables. And why is her neck stiff sometimes when she's sleeping? Well, sometimes you just have to change the pillows a little bit in bed. Sometimes it's an open window that does it. I would probably have your mom look at it and make some decisions as to whether or not to change a few things. But
when she grows up, she's going to know a whole lot about health and fitness.
Absolutely. Listening to this show, there is no doubt about it. She will be ahead of the game.
Want to bail out on your Brussels sprouts? Just send your questions along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We'll see you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook.
And of course, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. This show is produced by Gabrielle Pedriani. Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich, and our technical director is Brad Colburn. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0518Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.